Welcome to the Lawyers, Guns, and Money podcast.
Hello, Lawyers, Guns, and my listeners. My name is Rob Farley, and this is the latest episode of our series on oral history of the blogosphere. I am delighted to be joined today by Joe Zonka, who is currently employed by the Louisville Courier Journal, but in his day did a number of blogs and was part of the scene. How are you doing today, Joe?
Doing great, Farley. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. It is a Tuesday in the bluegrass, and it's really, really wet, but it's also a lot. It's maybe 15 degrees cooler than it has been in recent days, and that's a pleasant thing for me. So so I guess I want to start by expressing, you know, one of the reasons you're on here, that your experience of blogging is a little bit different than a lot of folks who follow the national political blogosphere. You were part of that from time to time, but you began as, and I think you've continued your career in a lot of ways, as very much a local blogger, and local in the sense of Kentucky politics, the bluegrass, and so forth. So can you think back to the days of distant past, you know, when you started blogging and why you started blogging?
I started blogging kind of by accident. There was a blog called Bluegrass Roots that Ben Carter had run for a couple of years. And he had, I think, gone to law school, and he just didn't have time to run it anymore. And we happened to meet at some party or some event in person, and I had told him that I just started writing in this monthly paper in Lexington, kind of a media criticism thing, the first time I've ever really written anything in public. And he mentioned
that was an actual print and paper.
Yes.
Was it the progenitor of the Chevy Chaser, or
I think the Chevy Chaser already existed. It was called Nougat, and it was like a monthly thing. And I would later write for other things like Ace Weekly that came out. And there was another W was another publication I wrote for sometimes that I think was also owned by the Chevy Chaser. But that was really my first time. That was like middle of 2006 that I'd never really written anything in public before. And so we met, and he said, well, I've got this blog that's just kind of sitting there doing nothing, and asked if I wanted to take over. And I said, sure. I was a big blog reader, but I'd never really been a commenter or poster on anything. And for the first, you know, 6 months or so, maybe up to a year after that, I didn't really post a lot, and I didn't really get a lot of readership for that part. In fact, trying to remember what I wrote in that first year is kind of foggy. It was so long ago, and it was before things started to pick up in terms of readership and people paying attention to me. But that was how I at least got my foot in the door there in 2006. And then in the middle of 2007 was the first thing I really wrote that got any kind of attention, where me and Jonathan Gitlin, our friend, went to the Creation Museum about a week after it opened. And I wrote a post on Bluegrass Roots, was basically just, I took a picture of just about every exhibit in there and just made jokes about them. And I cross-posted that at Daily Coast. That was the first time I'd ever made a post on, of course, that was like the community blog then. And so I cross-posted it there, and it was like the number one, like most read, like a user guest submitted post of that week or whatever. And it just blew up, and all these people started coming to my site, and I was like, oh, this is weird. People are actually reading it. And after that, I think I kind of paid more attention to it and started writing a lot more. And then it kind of took off from there.
Now, Bluegrass Roots eventually, and maybe you can tell me a little bit about this, it eventually developed into something that was in a lot of ways similar to the structure of Daily Coast. And that, I mean, one could post diaries, right? It was not just like a stable, because we've never done that at Lawyers, Guns, and Money, right? That's never been part of our model. But at Bluegrass Roots, you had a lot of people writing for you in ways that were not necessarily reflected on the front page, but that you could find easily.
Yeah, eventually. It didn't start out that way. I think the first format of that was, I think it was Blogger. It wasn't Blogspot. It was one of the ones before that. It was like very, very, very basic. And it was not too far after that, the Creation Museum post. It was sometime that summer in the fall where there was like a network of like a 50-state blog network that kind of, I don't know if it was created through COAS or MITD or something like that, but they basically offered all these kind of lefty blogs that focused on state politics. They kind of offered them to use the same kind of format of, I'm not sure what specifically was called, but the same kind of format as Daily Coast and some of those others where users can submit their own diaries, and it became where anyone could post. And if you have a good post, and get upgraded, and a lot of more people can see it. So that happened sometime around 2007. And yeah, that allowed anyone to post on Bluegrass Roots. And there were some regular ones that I added on there, and there was, you know, anyone in the state can write their own post about anything that was happening in Kentucky.
Yeah. You know, at what point, you know, I like to lately been talking a little bit about Kentucky exporting its politics to the rest of the country, right? Because of course we have the Senate Majority Leader, we have Rand Paul, who is, you know, a very special kind of senator. Mm-hmm. But there's also, right, even some Democrats who've lost have gained national profile, right? So I mean McGrath, for example. Like at what points other than the Creation Museum did you find that people were really paying attention to politics in the bluegrass back during this period, and how much would just sort of remain stuff that was happening in Kentucky?
I remember there was some around late 2007, it was coming up on the 2008 Senate race in Kentucky, and there was some jockeying among Democrats about who was going to run against McConnell on the Democratic side. And I remember writing a lot about Andrew Horn, who had run for Congress in the Louisville district the year earlier and lost to John Yarmuth. And he was really beating the drum on the anti, you know, Iraq war, Iraq invasion and pulling out of Iraq. He's a Marine veteran. And he was making, and I was very, very anti-Iraq invasion and at that time. And I remember I was promoting him a lot, and there were other people promoting other candidates. So that was one thing I remember. I got some play in late 2007 and early 2008 when he declared that he was going to run. He eventually pulled out of that race, but there was some attention there. In terms of a lot of national attention, I think a lot of that didn't come until 2010, when Kentucky had a crazy Senate election on both the Republican side and the Democratic side. And that was the Rand Paul race, where he came out of nowhere to defeat Trey Grayson in the Republican primary. It was Mitch McConnell's big candidate. And I remember getting a lot of play nationally on some stuff that I wrote then. And it was Barefoot and Progressive at that time. I think about March 2008, I created the new one. And also the Democratic side, it was Jack Conway and Dan Mangiardo, who was kind of a old school social conservative Democrat running in that race. And so I remember getting a lot of attention writing about both of those races. And that was the time when that was basically all I was doing was the blog, living in poverty in my parents' house and not making any money. But I remember those two things getting, those two races on the Democratic side and the Republican side getting a lot of attention in 2010 nationally.
So, you know, sticking a little bit earlier, but even all the way up to that, you know, Bluegrass Roots was not the only thing going on in terms of the Kentucky blogosphere, right? There were other bloggers. Can you tell us a little bit about sort of that period, you know, starting when you took over with Bluegrass Roots? Who else were you talking to? Who else was out there? And, you know, also if you could talk a little bit about, because Kentucky is not Tennessee in terms of like having these three specific regions, but Kentucky does have regional differences. Like were there Louisville bloggers? Were there Eastern Kentucky bloggers? What's your recollection of how that played out?
Well, the big blog, I don't think it was the first blog. I think Bluegrass Roots might have been the first blog, but the big blog was Bluegrass Report, which was run by Mark Nicholas. And that came on the scene in 2005, a little before my time. But that was huge because they took on Ernie Fletcher and they got a lot of readership, or he did. And I think the Governor Fletcher or his administration basically blocked the website from being seen on state computers. And he filed a lawsuit to try to stop that. And so that was a big deal, but a lot of people started reading it in 2005 and in 2006. He kind of faded away. I remember a lot of my memory of this stuff is very foggy because this is such a long time ago now. But
hey man, this is why we're doing this now instead of 5 years from now, right? 5 years from now, you want to be able to remember what your name was in 2006.
Yeah. And looking back on it too, it's weird how, just in preparation for this, I was trying to remember some stuff, and it's amazing what a short period of time it was. It seemed like it was like this lasted like a decade, this whole blogging period, but it was just I only blogged for basically like less than 4 years in total. But anyway, the Bluegrass Report, it kind of off and on like went away and then came back for like the next year or two. But by 2007, there were a lot of different blogs. There was my blog. There was a Hillbilly Report, which Jim Pence did, and he would kind of just go around the state and interview people and take video of like campaign rallies and speeches and interviews, and he would post all of those. And that was really, really what he did.
I mean, I think that all three of us got credentials to one of Obama's 07 rallies in Lexington.
Yes, I think you're right. Yeah, I remember that. I think Coleman Elridge opened for Obama, who's now the KDP chairman. So there was a Hillbilly Report, Jim Higdon, who has the CBD, what's the company? Cornbread. He wrote Cornbread Mafia, the book, and Cornbread Hemp. He had a blog, I think it was called Marion County Lines. It was kind of state politics. Ben Ray had a blog, and he's now in like DC politics right now. There was Page One Kentucky, which was kind of Louisville focused, but also state politics. It seemed like there were a lot more on the left than there were on the right. I remember Elephants and the Bluegrass was kind of a McConnellite kind of wing of the party blog, and it was actually written by the husband and wife team. The husband was nominated for a federal judgeship by Donald Trump, and a lot of his like posts that were controversial came up when it came time for his confirmation, but he was confirmed. There was also like I forget the name of it. It was something like Rural Democrat, which was more of an Appalachian area blog that kind of supported more of those kind of candidates. And a lot of the Democratic ones, it was really factional, where you were either on the because Kentucky Democratic politics is so divided into fiefdoms. It's not just ideological, or at least back then it was. There was, what region are you from? Are you from Appalachian? Are you from Western Kentucky? Are you from Louisville? Are you from Lexington, Northern Kentucky? Which kind of political consultants are you using? So a lot of it was factional, and Bluegrass Report was kind of the, you know, it went after Ernie Fletcher, but it was also very factional. And then it went after Jerry Lundergan, who was the party chairman at that time. And so it was kind of anti-Lundergan and pro, I would say more pro kind of the Beshear faction of the party back then, Steve Beshear. So a lot of those blogs kind of got into factional, you know, fighting of, you know, what kind of Democrats do you support? What kind of Democrats do you oppose? But that kind of typical of a lot of the state blogospheres, as I can remember, is the question of what kind of Democrats are you supporting? And for people that tried to do it full time, it was like, well, who's paying you was the big thing. And And so a lot of accusations on, you know, you being bankrolled by somebody to push certain politicians. I remember that was like a big debate among the blogosphere then.
Yeah, no, there was this anti-establishment aspect to sort of what you might think of as the early and mid progressive blogosphere that was certainly apparent on the national scale in 2004.
Yeah,
it was interesting. Yeah. What's that?
Oh, Howard. The Howardian. Yeah.
It was interesting that by 2008, you know, both sides of what become the big factional fight in 2008 attempt to appropriate the anti-establishment aspect of it while they are creating vastly, increasingly professional blogging apparatus. All right, so moving back in, so, and you can feel free to discuss or not discuss any of the unpleasantness associated with this, but you move from Blue Grassroots to Barefoot and Progressive at some point. And then Blue Grassroots sort of fades into the background. I know that Ben tried to bring it back and turn it into something, but it sort of fades into the background. And you're part of Barefoot and Progressive.
Yeah, I think Ben kind of took the keys away from me. And I think I got back into the factionalism where I was a little too critical of Bashir and certain Democrats and maybe dropped too many F-bombs on there. And so he said, I'm going to take that back now. So I started the new one. We're very friendly now. We've gotten past that. But I started Barefoot and Progressive, and I did that for up through that summer. And a lot of the, and then I moved to DC and took a job at the nonprofit there for about a year and a half through the end of 2009.
Now, did that, I forget now, did that job involve public writing too? Not necessarily blogging, but, or?
Yeah. So I would blog, I ran their blog and I would blog for them. And I also had people under me that I would manage who would do blogging for that. And it was a lot of like comprehensive sex ed, youth rights and information, stuff like that. So I would, you know, I would blog and I would kind of coordinate or work with ones like Feministing and Feminist and stuff like that during that time. But I also blogged a little bit back home for Barefoot and Progressive. And I had people like Terry Whitehouse and David Shankula who kept blogging at Barefoot and Progressive. And I think they probably still did the bulk of the posts when I was in DC. But I came back late 2009 and did that for, it was really I was unemployed at that time and I was trying to make a living doing blogging, and I never was very successful at that. But through 2010 and early 2011, that was pretty much all I was doing and devoting all my energy to.
So, but you were part of, with work at the nonprofit, you were part of what I think we've taken to calling what was really this first wave of professionalization of bloggers.
Yeah.
You know, for me and for Scott Lemieux, this was like working at the American Prospect. Mm-hmm. But you see lots of others. I think even something like Amanda and Melissa joining the Edwards campaign for a bit, that's also right. Part of this first wave of professionalization. And in a lot of ways that doesn't stick, or it, for some people it does stick, but it becomes really complicated later on.
Yeah. The second time it did stick, when I eventually left, in the summer of 2011, I put this big effort to revamping Barefoot and Progressive and tried to make a big fundraising pitch to be able to do it full time. And it was not working. And then I got the offer, to write for, Leo Weekly in Louisville. And that was a really hard decision for me, but I took that job, and that summer writing for the Alt Weekly there in Louisville. And, you know, it also had a blog. I would write for the weekly, but I also kept up a blog, and there was talk of possibly moving all of the Barefoot and Progressive archives to the Leo one, but that everybody decided probably wouldn't be best. So that was kind of my full-time move out of blogging, and Barefoot and Progressive stayed around for a couple of years. But it eventually kind of faded away because people just didn't have the time to devote to it, especially when you're making no money off of it and people had other things to do. And that was kind of the era where the Kentucky blogosphere kind of faded away.
Right. So, I mean, usually I ask the question, what kind of impact did blogging have on your career? And, you know, just from the way the story you're telling, it seems like, you know, it did have a pretty big impact, right? I mean, it had a big impact on, I mean, I know some of the stuff had a big impact on, you know, what you were doing in Lexington at the time when you started the blogs, but it affected your work with a nonprofit. And then, I mean, it kind of was like an entry point into the more formal mainstream journalistic world that started with Leo. Is that yeah. fair, would you say?
Yeah, I had no training whatsoever in you know, journalism. And to a large extent, I had no clue what I was doing when I was blogging. I was just an angry guy who had a blog that no editor. So
listeners, you can't see this right now, but Joe is literally polishing his Pulitzer Prize.
Yeah. But I went to Leo Weekly, and Sarah Kelly was the editor there at the time and hired me and basically taught me how to write like a journalist. That was a pretty big transition, but you know, it kind of took off and I did well there. And then about 3 years later, I left to go to Insider Louisville, which is like a Louisville focused news site. There was not a blog. Everyone made sure to point out there was not a blog. But I wrote there for 5 years and covered state politics and local politics and stuff like that. And then they folded 2019 and I got a job with the Courier Journal, and now I'm their state government reporter and making more than I made at Leo Weekly, or certainly Barefoot and Progressive, I can tell you that.
Right. And some, there will probably be a few people who are listening to this who will remember Primary Day 2021, where you and Phil were at the Louisville Convention Center as people were banging on the door. I just remember the video yeah. of you guys there as people were banging on the doors, hoping to be left in. That was some great TV, to be honest. Great web TV, anyway.
Yeah, that was a 2020 primary, I believe. Yeah.
Was it 2020? Okay. Yeah, no, I guess that makes sense. So at this point, you know, what you do is what we might call straight journalism, and you don't do anything. Do you do anything that could be called blogging at this point?
No. Everything has multiple layers of bureaucratic editing. So many eyes go over my stuff before it goes up, but I just do the straight news. And I mean, basically my work covering state government and to a secondary degree, politics and elections, is, you know, just looking to how money and power impacts legislation, impacts policy, impacts elections. So it's, for the most part, it's been what I'm writing for the Courier Journal is pretty similar to what I wrote at Insider Louisville, and not too much different than what I wrote at Leo Weekly. The blogging days are way in the rearview mirror. And I kind of shudder to think about me not having an editor and just being to post every single thought in my head on the blog. I kind of regret like 90% of my choices in life and everything I've written. And I'm kind of glad that those archives are long gone. And because I kind of shudder looking back at what I wrote last year, and let alone what I wrote 12 years ago.
So yeah, that was my next question. I ask everybody, and for people who've listened to the series, there's a huge range of response, right? Some people, like Brad Long, are religious about their, and Lawyers, Guns, and Money were the same way. We're religious about our archives and the maintenance of them. Matt Iglesias, he just doesn't care, right? His complete indifference, not hostility, not you know, sort of willingness to hold on to him. He just doesn't care. Other people are different, but for you, like, you don't want them around, right?
So. Well, it was kind of an accident because when I was working at Insider Louisville, so it must have been like 2014, 2015, Barefoot and Progressive was hosted by Sunant, and they did a lot of work. I think they do work for for Lawyers, Guns, and Money, I think. And eventually it came to the point where they were like, you know, we can't do this anymore. So you're going to have to find your own company or your own way to do this. And so I tried to do that. And I just couldn't get it to, I couldn't get the site to load. And I was so busy with work and life, and I would just kept putting it off and putting it off. And eventually it got to the point where I had no idea how to fix it. And it really wasn't worth the effort to try to figure it out. So it just kind of went away by accident. And I didn't really expend any energy to try to get it back. And even the blog at Leo Weekly, those archives were also deleted, not by my doing, but when I left, they deleted like the whole decade of archives of the blog. So that stuff doesn't, I think Insider Louisville also, when they folded, they kept the website up for about another year, and then they just decided to delete, you know, 5+ years of their archives. So all of the stuff I've written pre, you know, summer of 2019 are now gone. It wasn't on the BNP stuff. It wasn't really intentional. It was just my total incompetence in how to deal with servers that kind of accidentally deleted it. But I'm not fretting over it at this point.
Right. Can someone still find Bluegrass Roots, or is that gone as well?
No, that's gone. I think I would assume almost every single one has vanished from the internet at this point.
So do you, I just have a couple more questions. Do you in your current position as, you know, the number one state politics reporter for the Courier Journal, I mean, do you still pay attention to stuff that happens in, you know, what is left of this rump blogosphere in Kentucky, which is not completely non-existent, but is not nearly as healthy as it was in 2005, 2006. Do you as a reporter still pay attention to that kind of stuff, what people are saying?
Are there any blogs left? Are you talking about Kentucky blogosphere?
Yeah, the Kentucky is, well, that's my question. Is there anything left at all, right, that you would pay attention to?
I don't think so, Farley. I mean, do you know of any?
I don't know. I mean, the Kentucky Fried was the only one that I'm really familiar with.
And I'm not sure whether you would even call that a blog or a website, or if Nick Storm runs that. I'm not sure if Nick would even call it.
There are a couple podcasts too, though, like independent politics podcasts.
Yeah,
there's that I don't think rise to the level of being a blog, but
yeah, Robert Connie here in Louisville. This is My Old Kentucky Home podcast.
Yeah, My Old Kentucky podcast.
Yeah, My Old Kentucky podcast. And I mean, it depends on if you call Kentucky Fried Politics a blog. It kind of, in many ways, kind of resembles the old blogosphere, because it's a lot of it is, you know, being able to use a single anonymous source and write a story about, you know, stuff like that, which was very, very common back in the old blogosphere. Whereas if I had a single source that didn't want to be named, there would be plenty of stories I could write for the Courier Journal, but my editors wouldn't let me publish them.
Right.
So in that sense, it's kind of the spirit of the old blogosphere, where you don't have, you know, a series of editors behind you saying, no, you can't publish that. And you know, it's not like they're posting completely wrong things. It's just the question of, you know, whether an editor would let you post that. I guess also the question of a lot of people wonder what the funding is for a blog like that, if that's all he's doing, if he's getting advertising. But that's kind of harkens back to the old blogosphere too, where everyone would wonder, for the people that were just doing the blog, like, how in the world are you making money off of this? Because money off of advertising back then, it was just nothing. I made the attempt at it and couldn't do it. And I hated asking people for money. So I couldn't raise money in that way to do it either. So, it depends on if you call that a blog or not, whether that would be, I guess, the only blog left at this point.
So this leads naturally to the question. I still have one more question after this, but this leads naturally to the question that I always ask in this. You know, when people, if someone were to ask you, and you can talk about this from both a local and a national perspective, right? When did the blogosphere die and what killed it? Like, if you could, if you know, just straight out that question, how would you go about answering that question?
It would be really conceited to say when I left.
And also inaccurate, but
I've listened to the others that you've interviewed, and you know, it's obviously a mix of people leaving to take paid work and not having time to devote to the blog that they make no money off of. That's part of it. You know, Google Reader going away, that was a big blow. Obviously, Twitter and Facebook, both as places to put content and places that sucked up all the possible advertising dollars for the blog. You know, those were all parts of it. In terms of Kentucky, it was the thing where people just couldn't, number one, people couldn't devote all their time to something that didn't make any money. People just faded away from that and focused on other things. To a large extent, a lot of it became, a lot of people could just post on Twitter what they would have on a blog, and
or Reddit. Reddit would be another one.
Or Reddit.
A lot of content on Reddit.
So yeah. There were all these different formats where people could come in and out and post as much as they want or as little as they want on different sites, and blogs stopped becoming the go-to place where people would get their information about. Take a pause. And I think one thing we haven't kind of mentioned is that the Herald Leader had their kind of blog, which is kind of the professional blog. But they had a blog that was, I think, Bluegrass Politics, they called it. And that had a lot of readership. And they would actually have like blog posts that didn't necessarily go on into the newspaper. And I think at some point that kind of faded away, and it just became the articles on the Herald Leader and Kentucky.com that became, you know, their work. And at some point, I'm not sure when exactly the point was, but I think it might have been around the same period where the Herald Leader blog went away. And that was kind of a death knell for anything resembling a blogosphere in Kentucky.
So I think this leads into the next question, which is, you know, one of the big characteristics of the blogosphere way back when, it's still a case of Lawyers, Guns, and Money, but not of many other surviving blogs, is a pretty tight relationship between the author and the commenter, right? This used to be absolutely critical to the blogosphere, right? So back in 2003, 2004, 2005, the fact that commenters could just effectively on the internet walk up to an author and ask, what the hell are you talking about? And the authors would often answer them, was really key to the culture of blogging way back in the day, and it really faded. On that score, I mean, I think you went from times where you had no comments to times where you had lots of them, and now you're obviously in a much different position. You know, how has that updated for you? Do they have comments on Courier Journal articles that are posted online? Do you read the comments? Like, how has your relationship with the audience changed as sort of your professional perspective on information and the production of information has changed?
I don't think there's any comment section on the actual website. I think the only kind of comments you get are when the Courier Journal like posts on their Facebook page, and then there are comments there, but I never open Facebook, so I never see those. The only kind of feedback I get is people writing angry emails or angry replies to me on Twitter. That seems to be the extent of the feedback I get. Occasionally something complimentary, but there's nothing, there's no Lawyers, Guns, and Money kind of community among commenters at what I'm doing now. And never really was back. And there was a small degree of community among the Bluegrass Roots and Barefoot and Progressive commenters, specifically with Bluegrass Roots, I guess, when anyone could write their own diaries and there was more of a welcoming atmosphere for people to come on and post their own thoughts. But nothing nothing even remotely like that now, I would say. Unless there isn't on the Facebook comments, but I never open that. Yeah.
No, there's a whole, I know Joe reads these. Why does he never respond? All right. This is, you know, my final question would be, and you know, I'm sort of springing this on you. So if you can't think of anything, that's fine. But, is there anything, what we've had a lot of times with this, is that there are just moments, you know, events, you know, that seemed to absolutely dominate life for everyone in the blogosphere from, you know, May 6th, 2005 to May 9th, 2005 inclusive. And it was just the biggest damn thing and life seemed to change. But, you know, this endless succession of these things that we have now completely forgotten because so many of the archives are gone, right? So much of what we thought was chiseled in stone wasn't even really written on paper, right? It's just gone. So is there anything that you recollect as like this big moment that you kind of wish people now could understand happened, either in the national blogosphere or the Kentucky blogosphere, that just sort of jumps out at you?
You know, with Barefront Progressive, to some extent, it was, you know, state politics and local politics, like the mayor's race in 2010 and everything that happened with the Centerpoint development downtown back in 2008. I think a lot of the maybe the most fun kind of topic or era was the post ARC Encounter tax break announcement in late 2010, where Governor Steve Beshear announced that he was going to have this press conference with Ken Ham and Answers. Well, I don't think Ken Ham actually showed up with Answers and Genesis to announce their big ARC Encounter, that they were going to build a giant ARC and they were going to get like huge amount of tax breaks for it. And I showed up to the press conference, which I rarely did in those days. I went up to Frankfurt to the governor's press conference and the journalists were asking questions like, so how big is this boat? What are the dimensions and stuff like that? And I was in the back of the room. I spoke up and I asked the governor, I was like, Governor, will there be dinosaurs in the ark? Because these are, of course, young earth creationists who believe that the earth is about 4,000, 5,000 years old and that humans used to ride on dinosaurs with saddles, according to books at the time. So I'd written about them a lot with the Creation Museum and I knew a lot about them. And Governor Beshear kind of looked at me shocked for about 3 seconds, kind of silent. And I asked the Answers in Genesis guy, well, maybe he could answer. And he eventually got to the mic and he's like, well, you know what we believe in. So it'll be biblically accurate. So yes, of course there will be dinosaurs on the ark. And that became like a big thing and nationally. And I think Matt O did a segment making fun of Beshear. And we had a Photoshop contest where users brought in their own Photoshops of Steve Beshear riding a dinosaur. So that was a lot of fun between that era, between that announcement and the months after where they debated the huge tax break they were going to get. That was probably the most fun era, I would say, of what I did at BNP back in the day.
Well, Joe, I want to thank you for joining us today. I want to thank all of our listeners for listening. We are going to continue this series, and we hope to reveal more of the corners of the blogosphere as we go along. But thank you so much, Joe.
Thanks, Rob.
Thank you again for listening to the Lawyers, Guns, and Money podcast. We would like to thank Elizabeth Nelson of the Paranoid Style for supplying the music necessary to make this podcast possible. You can find this track and the rest of the Paranoid Style's catalog anywhere you can find quality music. If you would like to support the Lawyers, Guns, and Money podcast or any other aspect of the Lawyers, Guns, and Money project, please visit us at www.patreon.com/lawyersgunsandmoney or donate through the PayPal link on the main website. Thank you again.